Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Essen, and I'm joined from a responsibly socially distant distance by my normal contributors, Travis Hudson and Andrew Riley. How are you, fine gentlemen, tonight?
I'm even in a different state, so I'm definitely socially distant from you guys.
I'm doing well.
So it is, I'll always throw out the date, but I'm going to throw out the date today. It's April 15th, and we're...
Tax day.
The OG tax day, no longer tax day, thanks to this little thing called coronavirus, COVID-19. We figured we'd maybe talk a little bit about coronavirus. This will be like a part two of our coronavirus podcast. It's kind of the big topic that everyone's talking about with good reason. You know, Andrew, you and I, a couple weeks ago, it seems like an eternity ago, had our first podcast where we talked about it. And I led off with, is this, you know, this generation's 9/11? And you said that seems like a pretty fair comparison. Has anything changed your mind, or do you think that's even more so the case now?
I think it's probably even more so the case now, simply because when we were talking a month ago, it was March 15th, we had that conversation. One of the things that was happening was schools were beginning to be closed, but we didn't necessarily know for how long. At this point, schools in Virginia, where we are closed through the end of the school year, and a number of other states have followed that or had done similar things earlier. So it's a significant impact on school-aged children and on parents of school-aged children, and that's something that we're going to remember, and I think that generational impact things is all about what we remember. We're going to remember where we were during the Rona outbreak because we were in our homes.
This will be like the O.J. Simpson, the Challenger explosion, all the other things we talked about during the OK Boomer podcast, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. I think, speaking of Virginia, I think we also have a stay-in-place order. I was checking on CNN, I think until June 10th, which is still a long ways away. So that's, I guess, assuming that things don't get worse or go according to plan. Travis, I think things are a little different in Maryland. I think you guys have to wear a mask in public thing going on now.
It changes. Some things are state, some things are county. So statewide, the schools are only closed until April 24th, which is a week and a half. I don't see how they're realistically going to open by then. Apparently they were waiting to see how well everything adapted to distance learning, which I don't see what difference that makes. Like, you can't open up the schools just because people don't like using Zoom or whatever to learn their classes.
Oh, so this is a good place. I'd like to just jump in. Sorry for interrupting you, but we're very timely here because distance learning has gotten off to a horrible start in Fairfax County.
I was going to ask if you guys, when Virginia says they're shut schools down, that just mean you're still doing remote learning, I guess, or they've started
theoretically.
Theoretically, yeah.
So as near as I can tell, Fairfax County Public Schools offered nothing in the way of remote learning resources, or very minimal in the way of remote learning resources. And just this past, yesterday, I guess, because today's on Tuesday, they finally started offering some remote teaching sessions for, I believe, 2 15-minute sessions a day. And after the first day, the next day, they announced there's going to be a 2-hour delay, I guess like a snow delay or something. And then after that, they said, actually, we're canceling it and we're not going to start up again until next week because it went so smashingly well. So, yeah.
So we have not started. So at least Howard County, where I am, they kind of gradiated where they focused on getting high schoolers up and running first, then middle schoolers. And I think elementary school is either starting next week or our parent orientation to make sure we understand how it works is next week, which is why I don't see why they would bother doing that just to open schools the next week. So I think that's pretty much them already admitting we're not going to reopen schools. So I haven't had the experience of Bruce doing it for his grade, but Alice is still in pre-K and she's actually been doing an hour every day for about a month now. And that goes as well as you can expect with a bunch of 5-year-olds and 4-year-olds. Like, it's silly stuff and like attention spans more so than like obscene stuff popping up in a Zoom or whatever I've heard happening in classes where people just put random things up on their screens or chat room or something. But she seems to enjoy it. You're clearly not going to get as much as actual being in a school setting.
Yeah, and so I guess this kind of leads me to one of the first topics I thought would be interesting to address for tonight, and that is, you know, how are you guys doing? How is life changed? What's different? What's the same? What's challenging? What's not? I think maybe we should give a brief introduction as to like what our current situations are, because our situations are a little different. I can lead off to give you kind of an idea. I am exclusively working from home right now. I guess I should lead off with I still have a job, thankfully. That's not something that can be said for a lot of people out there. I'm working a job where I can work remotely. My company is largely unaffected by a lot of what's going on. A lot of their clients are unaffected, so the company is still doing fine. I'm able to work from home, and I've been doing that for the past couple weeks. My kids have been home instead of going to school, and my wife has thankfully been able to shoulder most of the responsibility in keeping them out of my hair while I work, and also, you know, doing her best to educate them and keep them on track for what they should be learning from school. But I guess things are probably a little different for you guys.
Andrew looks like he's writing, so I guess unless he wants to go in.
No, go for it, Travis.
Because maybe it'll be a gradient, but like, so yeah, I still have a job. I'm actually essential, so I still go into the office because I can't do my work remotely. If I could do my work remotely, they would require it, but I guess since other people are still going to work, you could go in if you really wanted to, but now I have to do my work there. So far, we do not have to wear masks. The county where I work at is requiring masks in. It was a very confusing press release. They said it was like something like essential retail businesses, but then they kept dropping the retail and just saying essential businesses. So there are questions at our job, like, hey, do we have to start wearing masks? And it said, you have to provide us masks. And they said, no, that's only retail. So like I said earlier, when some of the stuff is county by county rather than state, it gets a little confusing because people don't live and work necessarily in the same counties, especially here in Maryland, where stuff is kind of located separately. But day to day, I don't want to say it hasn't affected anything because the kids are home, but my wife was already stay at home. So she could already, like, we're not affected like that. Like, we're not losing half of our income because one of us isn't now working or anything like that. And I'm doing the grocery shopping for her parents because they live right up the road from us and they don't want to go to the store. They tried Amazon to do some online shopping. I think they finally got a shipment from Peapod, maybe, because they had to give up on getting Whole Foods because they couldn't get a delivery window. But so, yeah, apparently my mom's making us cloth masks. So when the day comes that our county does require me to wear a mask to go out to the store, I'll actually be able to go out and not get fined.
All right, so I'll go for a little bit here. I'm still working. We are on about an 80% telework schedule where I'm working from home 4 days a week most of the time. It's a little bit inconsistent because for the past week and a half, we had a case of coronavirus identified in our building. And so they were trying to deep clean the offices. So I was asked not to go in for a little bit. Now that's in the past, and I'm supposed to be going back to do some stuff tomorrow, actually. So while I'm at home, I'm doing the telework. And that is interesting because trying to do the telework when I have kids that are the age of my kids at home because they're not in school means it's very hard for me to actually get my work done. Telework is very possible with the work that I do, but not necessarily in my living arrangements. So today, for example, I spent a large chunk of today basically building a home office out of one of the rooms that we had been sort of holding off for storage area. And that was my work task and home task. So there's been a lot of changes to the household structure because of that. The kids are technically on spring break this week, so they are not having any schooling. But before, they have been doing this remote learning thing. And that may be a difference in our counties between Paul and I living in the same state but different counties. Or it might be that my school that my girls go to is a private school. But it's also a private school in a low-income area. So there's not a whole lot of money in the school, but they take advantage of that for various government grants and have a lot of technology in the school for that kind of learning already. And I think that that means that the principal and the teachers have been better prepared to handle remote learning than another school might have been. So I actually don't know how much that is private school versus public school, how much that is county versus one county and another county, or how much of that is just, you know, my family situation. The family and home life is tough, though, because with everyone on top of each other, and kids trying to stay on top of their learning schedules and not wanting to, they want to do their fun things, they want to play games and watch shows, and at what point do you just throw up your hands and say, okay, yeah, I guess you can watch shows today. We'll call it cultural learning instead of book learning.
Yeah, so you both have touched on another thing that I kind of wanted to bring up, and this might go a little off the deep end, so I apologize in advance. But one thing I've read about, which has always struck me as odd, is there's this hot take that libertarians must be struggling with the idea of like their entire worldview falling apart right now, and presumably because, oh, how can you possibly support a smaller government during a time of pandemic? And I find that really interesting because a lot of the things that I have seen reinforce my political beliefs in that all I see is a bunch of government incompetence and mishandling of the situation, and a lot of ways where a lot of these private businesses and companies have been doing so much better. You know, Travis, you were talking about like a lot of the inconsistencies between like who needs a mask and who doesn't need a mask depending on the local or state governments, and we see the difference between anecdotal difference between like the public schools and private schools, but it's even more than that. I mean, we've seen reversals of suggestions whether you should wear masks or not from the CDC and WHO. Originally, they said like no, masks aren't necessary. Now we're learning that yeah, they probably are a good idea, and you should have been wearing them. And maybe they were lying to us because they wanted us to not hoard the masks from the health professionals. I mean, I think this past week I got a flyer from Fairfax County saying like, hey, here's what you should do in time of coronavirus. And I'm like, gee, thanks. Like, I've been social distancing for like over a month now, I think, or at least many weeks. And you're just now telling me to do all these things that I already have been doing. Like, this is not helpful. Oh. You're several weeks too late on this.
So that I was thinking about that when you were talking, but I railed against this back when I lived in a townhouse, the lack of communication from our HOA consistently, or when the recycling bins stopped taking plastic bags, that I was like, I didn't get any, if I wasn't following a certain account on social media or something, I wouldn't even know. I wouldn't even know the county where I work requires face masks to go shopping now if somebody hadn't sent out an email at work about it. There's like, how, because they wouldn't even know to do that. Like, they don't, I guess something somewhere knows what county I work in, but there's not really like a good notification stream besides hopefully you're following the right accounts on all your news feeds.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions from people like, you know, are you in a lockdown? Or are you allowed to go out and do stuff? Like, what are you allowed to go out and do? I'm like, I'll be honest, I have no idea. My method of finding out is probably one day I'll be out doing something and I'll get pulled over by a cop and fined or given a ticket. And I'll be like, oh, huh. That's interesting. I guess I'm not allowed to do X. And that's kind of a crappy way of handling things.
Well, when they announced this, we're not giving Andrew a chance to chime in here, but when Maryland announced the stay-at-home order, I told my wife and then all the coworkers at work agreed, was like, this changes absolutely nothing. Because it's not like the cops are going to pull everybody over and ask, where are you going? At least not at this point. Like, because they don't know who's essential, because, you know, the people were still essential. People going to the hospital for work or for whatever they need, or if you're just going to the grocery store. So I was like, there's no reason the cops are going to pull anybody over for any new reason, really. So yeah, they called it a stay-at-home order. Is it called stay in place in Virginia? I heard you say stay in place, not stay at home.
It's a phrase I've heard. I don't know if it's what they call it here or not. But
that's another inconsistency. But are you under lockdown? Are you stay at home? Like, what? There's no consistent names for it, which I guess kind of speaks to maybe it would be nice if there was a stronger national level of that. But I also agree, like, the CDC wasn't really handling things as well as maybe they should have.
Yeah.
At a national level. Like, that's why we didn't have test kits for a while, right?
Because various, no government, I shouldn't say no government. So many governments around the world have handled this poorly. You know, the United States, sure, we've handled it poorly, but Italy's handled it poorly. Spain, a lot of these European countries have handled it poorly. We were not prepared. Very few governments were prepared for this. And when it did come, even then, we have reacted poorly. There was the mayor of New York City who just a week or two ago was like, oh, I just found out today that apparently asymptomatic people can spread it. And I was like, really? I knew this weeks before that. How are you, the person who's responsible for potentially shutting down the city and keeping people safe, how did you just find this out? It's incredible to me. And you said it doesn't make a difference, and this is all anecdotal, but there are plenty of stories out there about people being dragged off of subways for not wearing a mask, and apparently it's because you were supposed to wear a mask, and these people don't know.
That type
people
of
who are doing that. Sorry, go ahead, Travis.
Oh no, I'll just speak to that last point and then let Andrew finally talk.
Never.
That's easy to see, though. If you're in a store or public place and you're supposed to be wearing a mask, yes, then it makes sense. Hey, not wearing a mask. I'm talking about people driving on the highway. The cops can't pull over unless you're going to do checkpoints.
Yeah, I was going to say, never know.
Which could be coming. I have my papers. I have a letter from my company saying
that's kind of scary to hear. I have my papers.
No, that's I phrase it that way on purpose. I have my papers. So if they pull me over, I show them the letter. I show them my work badge. I show them my ID, and they're supposed to let me on my merry way.
You know, the Nazis had pieces of flair they made people wear. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Andrew.
I've completely lost track of my point.
Speaking of pieces of flair, wait, Nazis. So
my work ID is a piece of flair. Yeah, that does.
What I was saying, I wanted to get to the subway thing, people being dragged off the subway. If I understand that situation correctly, based on what I read about it, it was other people being upset about the lack of masks on the subway. It wasn't a government response, even in the form of the police. It was individuals saying, we're not happy that you're not taking this health situation seriously enough, and so we are taking the responsibility on ourselves to keep ourselves safe and getting you out of this through violence, through physical means. And that's really not something that we see a whole lot, but it is still very much of a man on the street person in the situation dealing with it. What I wanted to say about the governmental response is that government responses, especially from bigger governments, and the bigger the government is, the more this is going to be the case, I think, it's slow. The federal government is a big organization. Big organizations are not known for being nimble. They are able to do the same thing over and over again really well, but when the situation calls for a change, they're not well suited for that. This situation required a change, and so they started making changes. They actually, for the federal government, made a couple of decisions on new things to do, such as the stimulus package. And it still took weeks for that to actually happen because they said, well, the IRS will handle the payments, and the IRS didn't have any process for getting money into the hands of this many people. I got my stimulus money today, and that's 3 or 4 weeks after this has been enacted, and I got it as fast as I did only because I already gave the IRS my bank account information for my federal tax return for last year. If they don't have that information and they have to mail me a check, I could easily not be seeing that for another 2 or 3 or 4 or longer weeks. And that means that if I were in the situation where I needed it right now to survive, that would be really bad. The government can't respond to this because it's not nimble. It's too big. The state governments are a little bit smaller, so maybe they're more nimble. But then you have different state governments competing. They have different terminologies, like what Travis was talking about. So is it shelter in place? Is it stay at home? Ultimately, it doesn't really matter because even the most extreme things that I've been seeing is largely suggestions. The Virginia executive order doesn't have any teeth behind it in terms of, for most situations, penalties, because it's very open. You're allowed to do so many things in Virginia. Yeah, we're supposed to stay at home and not have contact with people. And to encourage that, we're going to, say, shut down businesses and do these other things to minimize your exposure. But as far as the law is saying, if a business is open, I'm allowed to go to this business. If I want to go outside, I can go outside because there's 20 different reasons why I can go outside. I don't have to stay in my house. I'm allowed to go on a walk. I'm allowed to go for a run. I'm allowed to go to the park if the park is open. If the park's closed, that's trespassing. And they can get me for that. And so they're going to shut down a lot of the parks. But a lot of things are open. And I don't think it's just because we're in Northern Virginia, which has an economy that's still doing quite well, all things considered, largely because we have so many federal government employees who are still essential or at least still getting paid. But because those executive orders don't have a lot of teeth behind them. There are suggestions on increasing the distance and decreasing the contact rather than actually locking us in our houses.
Yeah, so one thing I wanted to point out is that the hot story on social media today was that the reason why the stimulus checks are taking so long to go out is apparently because Trump insisted that the checks go out with his signature on it. No idea if that's true or not, but that's at least what the internet is in an uproar about. But you bring up a good point, Andrew, and I'm curious as if anybody here is aware of basically the constitutionality of some of these. Trump has said, like, oh, I have absolute authority to shut down the states or reopen the states or whatever. Well, that's clearly not true.
Well, but I read another article. He had to start walking that back already today.
As with many things that he says.
I think somebody must have finally walked up to him and showed him the Constitution and said, that's not really right.
It's his morning briefing. Sir, here's the Constitution again.
They just showed him Schoolhouse Rock or something. He's like, oh, now I understand. Okay.
That would be a better solution than what I think we're actually doing.
Yeah. But no, but it's frustrating because a couple days ago I wanted to teach my girls to ride a bike, and we have a driveway which is slanted, so it's not an ideal place to learn how to ride a bike. And there's a parking lot near a baseball field, relatively close to our house. I've taken them there before to practice in the parking lot, just riding around that parking lot. It's nice and flat, and there's not a lot of cars parked there. So I said, great, I'll do that right now. I'm sure it's not going to be a problem. Well, they had stupid traffic cones blocking off stupid parking lot to this baseball field, presumably because I guess it was closed. But
yeah, the park is closed.
And I understand that you don't want a bunch of people playing baseball in the baseball field, but really you can't just like use the parking lot. Like there was no one around for like that you could see at all. Like I'm more socially distant there than I would be walking around my neighborhood, which I do with my girls pretty much every day anyway. So it's kind of weird, like the arbitrariness of some of these measures.
And that was a weird stage of like, Maryland's been kind of weird. They don't do something all the way. They kind of try to ramp it up. So like early on, they closed all the gates to the parks, which prevented you from driving, but they said explicitly, oh, you can still walk to them. I'm like, yeah, you just park on the other side of the gate and walk around the gate. This did nothing. And then like, you know, a couple of days later, they finally said, okay, no, like we're going to shut down the parks. And then a few days later, they had to say, oh, and stay off the playground structures, like wherever they are, like I guess tot lots and everything like that, like maybe inside neighborhoods and things like that, they were saying. So like you can still play in the one in your yard, but just not any of them outside. I don't know how they're enforcing that, but...
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of like when the government shut down and they were like, well, the government shut down. We have to put all this caution tape around like the national monuments to say that they're closed. It's like, really? Like these outdoor national monuments, you're spending more money putting like caution tape around them saying that they're closed or whatever, not caution tape, whatever it was, rather than just like letting them open, letting the public access it. It seems stupid.
No, you don't want to. In that case, you want to prevent vandalism. But that's in this case, what you're talking about—the arbitrariness of the decisions—comes down to ownership. They can't keep you off your own playground in your own yard, but they can say you're not allowed to go onto the property owned by the government. So they shut down their property and say, "Okay, the parks are closed. You're not welcome there. If we find you, we can't arrest you." But they don't own everything. And so those things that are not owned by the government, they follow those executive orders. And the executive orders, like I said, are pretty weak in a lot of ways where they're allowing a lot of things to continue. A lot of stores are encouraged to close but are still open. We had a number of stores that were deemed non-essential that deemed themselves essential and remained open anyway.
GameStop.
And like GameStop, exactly. So certain states have dealt with that in different ways. It was Pennsylvania that I was reading about where the GameStops in Pennsylvania had their business licenses revoked by the governor, saying, no, you're shutting down.
Pennsylvania closed like their liquor stores too, right? Their state-run liquor stores. Yeah, Pennsylvania is taking things seriously or trying to piss off their population.
I was amused by that when Hogan announced what, you know, it was like that morning he said, oh, well, 5 o'clock tonight, all non-essential businesses close down. And here's the essential businesses are allowed. Grocery stores and liquor stores. I was like, wow, yeah, I guess guess liquor is still is very much essential at this point.
And you know what's what the what Florida has deemed essential? Travis, you'll appreciate this. The WWE.
No. Yeah, because they still had, they had WrestleMania without a crowd. It was all pre-taped.
And
yeah.
Apparently, like, Linda McMahon made a tidy little contribution to some politician's re-election fund or something. And the next day, they were like, oh, yeah, WWE, that's nice and essential. So, you know, we like to think that our government isn't too corrupt. Well, I don't think that. But, you know, you see a lot of things going on and you realize that,
Well, that was another... I mean, the NBA is trying all these silly things like having video game tournaments and horse tournaments and things like that. But one of the things that was thrown out for, I think, for the NBA and maybe for other sports was like creating biodomes or something and like quarantining.
Wasn't that a Pauly Shore movie?
Yeah. But it was like quarantining the players so that they couldn't leave and no one could again or whatever, just so that they would be able to play games like that or something. It's like,
well, you know, this should be like the rise of esports, to be quite honest. Like, if there was ever a time for esports to take off as a thing, people are starved for any kind of entertainment. And
I'm not so sure that they are actually starved for entertainment, though. Yeah. My own experience is that I have plenty of entertainment choices. I'm actually falling behind on some of my entertainment. You know, I listen to a number of podcasts for entertainment, and the reason why I'm falling behind on my podcast is that I don't get to commute anymore, at least not nearly as much. This is a good thing. This is a good thing. But it means that, you know, instead of having 3 hours a day of podcast time 5 days a week, I now have 3 hours a day of podcast time one time a week. That's 12 hours of podcasts a week that I'm missing out on. And I get to do something else instead, which is awesome. But it's not because it's not in the sense that I'm not getting this extra entertainment that you're talking about. So I have plenty of entertainment choices. And yes, I do think this is a great time for esports, and I think we actually are seeing some of that. But I don't think it's as big of a deal. I do think that the NBA and other professional sports leagues like that are going to find this to be very, very painful for them.
What did you guys see? There was a Bleacher Report article. I'm sure it was other places too, about Kirk Cousins talking about playing without fans in the stadium and say he might actually prefer...
Just like playing at Washington?
Ouch.
No.
He might prefer that because it would be like less pressure or something. And like another player said, yeah, like going into a place like Seattle or New Orleans might actually not be as bad because if there's no fans, then there's not all that noise.
Yeah.
With esports, it's funny that like I haven't read anything about any more people watching whatever is the popular esports right now, but yet they're trying to do like, you know, washed up basketball players playing NBA 2K. Yeah. And apparently it didn't go very well, I guess. There was some other game.
I know the horse tournament was kind of panned on the internet, at least.
Yeah, but at least that was real. I mean, like, from a certain perspective, at least that was a real sport. But even that was like, they had to get like Paul Pierce out. They had to dust off Paul Pierce.
Hey,
like, really?
What's wrong with Paul Pierce?
But you can't get like, if you want something like that to succeed, you need like Steph Curry to be in it. You don't bring.
He's going
to
win.
Don't bring Chauncey Billups and Paul Pierce. Like, people.
Big shot. Wait, what was it?
We know who these guys are. Does the generation that grew up with the Warriors even know who these guys are?
Okay, boomer.
I don't know who these people are.
Well,
yeah, you thought LeBron James was like, what team did you think he was on?
The Cavaliers?
Yeah, well, he's not anymore.
I think he
well,
thought
I,
he
I
was
think
on.
I knew that.
I think he thought he was on the Lakers before he actually was on the Lakers.
I think that he moved to the Lakers, and I thought he was still on the Heat and then the Cavs. I don't know.
Yeah.
All we know is we're wrong.
With quickly jumping to the podcast, so I did find a Science Versus podcast, which apparently has been around, that they do like fact-checking on science and things like that. But
don't fact-check science. That's not how that works.
I was going to say fact-checking science sounds funny.
Well, no, they fact-check like what's in the news. So like right now, all they're doing is talking about coronavirus although it's interesting looking at their feed. I only started listening in the past like week or two, but they had coronavirus podcasts popping up, you know, back in January saying like, hey, this new thing is out in, that sounds like a good thing, but this new virus is popping up in China. Like, should we be worried about it? And then, you know, like February, it's like, it seems like this coronavirus thing is not going away. And then now it's like every week or twice a week, actually, they're talking about it. But one of the things going all the way back about face masks, part of one of the episodes of that podcast, they were talking about face masks and whether or not cloth face masks are actually useful or helpful. Because even after the CDC had recommended them and told us all how to make it, the scientists they interviewed said they actually don't know why the CDC recommended that, because the cloth that's likely being used is not likely to be strong enough to stop viruses from passing through it. And it can sometimes, some of this I don't know if they're talking about from a health worker perspective versus the general public. They might have been talking from a health worker, which in case I totally agree, but because the last point to make there was they were talking about it could actually make you more sick because they get moist and that'll help bacteria grow in it and everything. But so
yeah, there's a lot of variables to deal with. One is, yes, like I think it's generally agreed that cloth masks won't do anything to prevent a virus from going through it. So for medical professionals, it doesn't do much. I think the idea is that it prevents the water droplets that you often expel while coughing, sneezing, maybe breathing, talking, whatever, from spreading as far, and therefore and those water droplets are what the virus often travels in, and so it helps prevent other people from catching stuff that you might have. But there's also, to your point, the other side where I think some studies have shown that when you have a mask, you tend to fidget with your face more, which you're not supposed to do. And maybe even it gives you a false sense of security. So you're more likely to be closer to people and not feel like you're safer. So you might take riskier behavior. So yeah. I could easily see both sides of that. Yeah. And I can understand why there could be conflicting recommendations.
Yeah, every notification at work when somebody's asking about face masks and when are they going to provide them and do we have to wear them, they'll always the response from the corporation will always caveat it with, face masks are still no replacement for washing your hands, not touching your face, staying 6 feet away. Like, it's on top of all that. So don't, when you start wearing a mask, don't feel like you're invincible all of a sudden.
Yeah, although it's kind of funny how quickly it went from like, nah, masks don't help at all, don't worry about it, too. Oh, now they're mandatory, and you're going to get fined if you're not wearing them. In certain places, I understand, well, only in certain places.
To me, your conspiracy theory kind of sounds right, that maybe they were downplaying it in the beginning to prevent, because they saw what was happening with toilet paper and at the grocery stores, and they were like, we can't have this happen to medical supplies, because didn't that happen a little bit with chloroquine or something like that.
The
hydrochloroquine.
There you go. Anti-malaria drug that Trump keeps on touting.
Yeah, when that popped up, that like pharmacies started saying they were having a run on it, even though half the news reports were people are dying because they're taking the wrong doses or whatever of it.
They're taking the wrong like chemical, I think.
Well, like because on that same science podcast, they were one of the older couples that had tried taking it was the lady was like, oh, look, this stuff that we put in our fish tank has chloroquine in it. Let's take that. And she died. And she survived, but her husband died like that same day. They were like half an hour. They were going to the hospital. It's like, wow.
Yeah, who would have thought that an aquarium cleaner would be bad for you to ingest?
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, it's the Darwin Awards. So.
It's the scared awards, too. They were probably scared, and they saw something that they had heard on the news and thought it was trustworthy. But, yeah.
It also comes down to how desperate are you? If you have the disease or you think you have the disease and you think you have a death sentence, then you're going to be willing to take chances. And that's one of the reasons why it's important that the officials who are making these statements do so with the knowledge that people who are desperate are going to take action, and trying to make sure that those statements are made with a sense of decorum, which I don't think Trump's very good at. I don't want to criticize him too much because this is not his fault. And believe it or not, I think he's done a better job handling it than a number of other folks would have, simply because he is largely staying out of the way. But when he does get involved, it makes a mess of things.
So I want to press you on that, because I know that there are people who are screaming at their stereo or phone or
Trump's,
whatever.
Trump has not done a good job.
Throwing their phone at the wall or whatever, because I know some people who listen to this. So defend yourself. defend on that topic.
Defend myself? No, I can try and defend Trump. How about that?
I'm going to offer you a chance to qualify your response there for your own sake.
Okay. So, item number one, we talked about how the CDC had a poor response initially to this situation, and this can also be pointed back and has already been pointed back to the fact that Trump cut funding to the CDC, especially on infectious diseases. And really, you can't even say Trump did that, because it's not like Trump wrote the budget. The Republicans and the Democrats agreed in Congress to a budget that cut the funding for CDC. And Trump signed off on it.
Do you think he even knows what the CDC stands for or what they do?
Before this, no.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
Now I think he probably has a pretty good idea. He's talking about firing Fauci. So
he's probably like, wait, Chuck E. Cheese changed his middle initial? What happened?
I don't think he's that out of touch. No, I think he does a very good job pretending sometimes, but I don't think he's actually that out of touch. So the CDC was not well prepared. The CDC underestimated the severity of the disease. I think that's actually a reasonable response based on what we saw initially, both because it is yet another SARS-like virus mm-hmm. coming from the Far East. We've had plenty of those. It's not an H1N1 situation. There was no reason to suspect it to be as bad as it was. So you think initially, based on prior experiences, that this won't be that bad, and then it turns out to be worse, because it is worse, because China was fudging their numbers, because it's very different from SARS and H1N1, etc. So the CDC, being smart people and experts, made a bad call. But the worst call that they made was that they didn't handle the testing right. I've heard this one considerably. One of the things I've heard is that the Germans developed a pretty solid test very early on, and rather than purchasing test technology and kits from Germany, the CDC decided to make their own, and then couldn't handle the demand because we got hit with the disease much faster and much harder than was expected. And so the CDC in Atlanta couldn't keep up with the test requirements. There's 2 weeks delays on the testing. They gave permission to the other agencies to do the testing, and there were errors in those tests. And a lot of that does come down to bureaucratic incompetence, which Trump is in charge of, in the sense that Trump is the head of the government and the buck stops there, whether he wants it to or not. But that's not like Trump is running the tests. It's not like Trump's in charge of the CDC. Trump made a decision to do something or not do something based on political expedience. And the biggest thing you can say about this about him beforehand is that he agreed to cut the budget and therefore left us in a place that was unprepared. And I think that's probably a failing, but as a libertarian, as someone who's in favor of smaller government, yeah, I'd probably have been going along with the cutting the budget too.
Yeah, and when Paul mentioned libertarianism earlier, I was thinking, wasn't this actually a perfect example for libertarianism, I guess, where the CDC couldn't keep up and they had to hand it over to companies and universities to keep up with it?
If the government had just had the proper funding, they would have been able to handle it just fine.
If they had infinite funding, the government would be perfect. So.
Right. Well, so my argument is obviously going to be much more on your side, but the counter argument will always be made. Just throw more money at this and the problem goes away. We just don't have enough government money in this and not in the right places. We're spending it on jet planes instead of tests. Except that you needed to have had these decisions made, you know, frankly, 2 years ago, not even 6 months ago, would have really helped out.
Yeah. Maybe you guys can fact check this. I always hear that Trump, or yeah, I guess more accurately, Congress, who wrote the budget, eliminated the pandemic unit or cut the pandemic budget, or there's like something specifically called pandemic. And now they're like, oh, well, now this is what you get. Is that like that's a real thing, though?
That is a quasi-real thing, in that the budget did cut funding for the unit that would have handled something like this when it came up, and there's an inevitability that it will come up. But cutting budgets is a normal thing, and yeah, I don't think it was anything malicious. It was just, we're going to cut money here and spend it elsewhere instead.
Right.
It's probably one of those things where, yes, unfortunately, the pandemic happened. And therefore, that decision looks bad. You could have also had, like, there could have been another dozen of perfectly legitimate cuts to terrorism or other things that didn't happen. And so those don't look bad. And they're
I'm not even questioning whether it was a bad or good decision. I was just like wondering.
Did it happen? Yes.
Yeah. Was that actually a budget item that got cut, or is that just people making up more anti-Trump?
It's not made up. I do think that they are ascribing to it intent that wasn't there. you know, we're going to do this so that we have this problem is certainly not on anybody's mind, especially not Trump, who is, you know, very populist. He loves being loved by the people, and doing something like that is not something that's going to win him a lot of adulation.
I wouldn't even put on Trump that he's sitting there with his fingers going, yes, now there will be a pandemic or something.
No, you could say incompetence, but even then, I don't think it was something that was going through anybody's mind, because if anybody had thought that this was a likelihood, then they would have said, yeah, let's cut something else instead. But it was the thing that hadn't happened for a long time, didn't seem likely to be happening anytime soon. And those are the ones that do tend to come back and bite you in the butt.
And there have been stories about, like, oh, look at this YouTube video from, whatever, 2, 3, 4 years ago of Bill Gates saying there's going to be a pandemic happening. And, oh, look, there's this Pentagon paper where they were warned that there's the possibility of a pandemic. Look, I'll always be the first in line to criticize the government over inept responses or whatever. But the thing that I'm always a little bit sympathetic to is the idea that, oh, the government was warned by this, or, oh, they should have known it could happen, or, you know, this was out there. Like, there are so many YouTube videos of people warning about all sorts of crazy stuff.
How about space aliens? Warning about space aliens. I can show you that one.
Yeah, and even back to 9/11, like, there were all these memos being thrown about what could happen and what possibly could happen. And you can't protect against everything. There's just no chance.
And at the risk of, having more people throw their phones, like, I can... The infamous memo of that Trump said he didn't actually read or didn't know about or something like that. Like, I mean, I can believe that actually would happen, because, I mean, think about how many memos the president must be shown. And, like, somebody else in the chain of command saw that memo and should have been pressing harder on it, right? Like, I know it all comes down, like Andrew said, the buck stops here at the president, but there's hundreds of people leading up to the president that are also supposed to be keeping an eye on things, right?
Absolutely. And he chose a lot of them. And so, you know, if it didn't work out that way, then it still falls to him to a certain extent. Right. That's why the buck stops there. But, you know, in a better situation, with better responses, could things be better than they are now? Sure. But what we're, I think, ultimately going to be surprised by here is that once this virus exists, once you have the first transfer from whatever source it was to the humans, and it starts spreading, and it's as virulent as this virus is, and it has the capacity for pandemic, it's going to have pandemic. It's just then about how we respond to it. So how has Trump responded to it? He's put out some misinformation. Bad. He has been underwhelming in his response and downplayed as bad. He has disregarded his advisors on many occasions when he should have. Bad. So he's handled it very badly in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he claimed total power. Yeah.
He claims total power. Super, super bad.
And he's now at the point where he's like, hey, you know, the one guy that everybody respects and has been part of, like, the every administration for the past, like, 20 years, he's getting popular now. I want to fire him.
Yeah, not super smart. But ultimately, the biggest thing that he has done, other than, you know, the passing the CARES Act, has been to largely be the figurehead, the guy who says he's in charge and is doing something and having his press conferences. He finally missed one for, like, the first time in a month. And that was a big news item that he finally didn't show up for one. So he's out in front taking some heat on these things, but looking the part of being presidential as much as he possibly can and taking a lot of heat for it. And, you know, ultimately his popularity has risen. We've seen his popularity numbers go up through this crisis rather than down. If he had been really, really mishandling it in as ways as public as it looks like he has, with all those failings that I'm noting, his numbers should be going much further down than they're not. And I think that does speak to the fact that he's largely not doing things. He's staying out of the way and being the figurehead, which is what he needs to be doing.
Yeah, I can't comprehend why his approval numbers have not gone down, let alone why they've gone up.
So it's, like, the same reason why Bitcoin went down, okay?
Like, even if you buy this narrative that, like, he's being the figurehead and he's absorbing the blame and everything, this is still, like, a huge disaster
that's terrible
on his watch. Yep. That is in some ways was preventable. Like, I realize that that's saying a lot, and that a lot of this is kind of not inevitable, but, like, it would be really hard to foresee and prevent, and a lot of experts got this wrong. But there are a lot of things that he could have done to handle it better and to mitigate it. Like, we still have a tremendous testing deficit, to your point, and that's something that maybe he's not directly responsible for, but again, it's certainly a failing where at the very least the buck stops there. And you know, it's the economy, stupid, like the market has tanked, like the economy, like so many people have been furloughed or laid off. I don't know who's looking at all this and being like, yeah, but thank God we still have Trump in charge. Like, I'm actually speechless. I just don't know how that makes any sense to anybody.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a role he had in actually getting the CARES Act off the ground or various aspects of it. He's going to get credit for it the way that all presidents get credit for the legislation on their side of things. And the fact is that the money is delayed. I mentioned that I got my money today. It was interesting that I got paid by the government on tax day rather than the other way around. but it's... The fact that that is happening and the fact that people are going to get those stimulus checks, I think that does mean a lot to the average person. It's one of the reasons why I think that something like universal basic income has a lot of potential. And it's one of the reasons why they're already talking about doing this again. You know, they said, okay, this was the first check. And as this continues on, maybe we need to cut another check. I saw that there's been another bill introduced into the House for an additional $2,000. With bipartisan support already. So the longer this goes on, the more money they're going to pump into this. And, you know, people love getting free money.
So one thing with the money and the, well, two things. One personal question kind of that my wife asked me was similar to your situation, since your wife doesn't work either, but you guys file jointly, I assume.
Right.
So you got the money, like, you only got one check that encompassed both of you, right?
Correct.
Yeah, just she was mechanically worrying that like she was going to get a paper check for her half or something. And I was like, no, because the whole point is we've filed together, so they're going to put it where you filed.
Right. So they count up the number of people on the tax return. Okay, we have two adults and in my case, three dependents. So it's this much money, and then deduct anything that needs to be deducted if my income is too high, and then cut the check essentially. It's really simple stuff. It's the only reason why they can get it out as fast as they have, because, again, the IRS is not in the business of cutting checks like this.
Yeah.
Well, they can get it out as fast as they can if you have your direct deposit information on file.
Exactly.
And so there's a not insignificant number of people out there who don't do that. They need that. They get that check. And interestingly enough, those are probably the people who most are in need of the money fast.
Yeah.
The underbanked or unbanked. And it's unfortunate that they'll be probably the last to get it.
The only thing that I could say there is that at least having the money in the hands of people, you know, we have the velocity of money going on right now. So if the person who is better banked has access to money, they can continue to shop and the stores can have a better chance of being open, even if they're less essential, as long as the executive orders get out of the way and people can go back to living their lives.
Now we have a modern monetary theorist here, do we? A Keynesian?
I am definitely not a Keynesian. Yeah, but
you sounded like one.
Velocity of money is not Keynesian.
Yeah, in a way, like I can commiserate, well, not commiserate, I can empathize, I guess, with like the businesses that have had to close. Like, you know, my comic book shop isn't open, or like a lot of most small businesses, the game shop had to close. But like, you know, all the restaurants are still open for carryout, and all the big box stores are open. I told my wife the other, like a couple of weeks ago, maybe, I was like, if you really wanted to go hardline and make sure you kind of try to stop this as dead in the tracks, everything would be closed. But that would destroy the economy even more than it is right now.
The further you go, not only are you going to destroy the economy, but you're going to kill people just as an accidental side effect of shutting something down. If you shut down grocery stores, people are going to starve. I mean, not really quickly, but so you need to have something else in place if you're going to go that far.
Yeah, and I understand grocery stores and pharmacies, but like it does seem a little bit of a luxury to have restaurants open. But on the other hand, like our neighbor said, like he didn't realize how many people in such a kind of seemed weird, in an affluent county like Howard County still ate out all the time, which is kind of like, well, actually, doesn't it make sense if you're higher income that you would be able to eat out? But I know that runs the spectrum from low income to high income. But yeah, I guess it just to show like how many people are still willing to eat out even when you're supposed to not go anywhere.
Yeah, and I mean, so that kind of transitions to another thing that I thought would be interesting to talk about. We one of the first podcast series that we did was kind of a personal finance series of podcasts. And I felt like that's something that we could at least touch upon briefly, because there are a lot of people out there who are learning the importance of an emergency fund right now, and or learning what it feels like to have a stock market pullback, you know, after one of the, I think, the longest bull market in history, 11 years or so, and seeing followed up immediately by a historically fast drop in the stock market in terms of the how quick it happened and the severity of it. And so I'm wondering if either of you, I mean, directed at Travis, but if, honestly, if either of you have any thoughts on personal finance in the time of coronavirus, or emergency funds, or what people can be doing to make things better, to stretch the dollar further, to budget, or any thoughts at all.
So interesting that you directed it at me, because I partially led that personal finance, and I partially led it from kind of an angle of FIRE, the financial independence, retire early mindset, which I'd kind of slackened myself a little bit. But there was a flurry of articles when the economy started tanking about pointing at the FIRE community and be like, haha, now you guys are screwed because look, all your stocks are going down. And some of the counter response to that was, yeah, but we don't need the money right now. And our lifestyle was already such that we weren't working. So we didn't lose a job right now. We you know, they kind of pushed back and said our lifestyle had already been kind of geared to living like this, where they weren't extravagantly spending, they're not reliant on a job, things like that. So
yeah, that seems as misdirected as the whole like, oh, you're libertarians, your entire worldview is falling apart now. It's like, no, this is actually kind of reinforcing. Yeah. Like we already were consisting on rice and beans and all the time, and so we have a 3-year supply in our closet, so no, we're good.
I don't know, it's kind of hard for me to answer if it's how to change it, because I mean, I'm still fully gainfully employed. I haven't missed anything. In fact, some people at work were writing. We have this hotline. This is how I know all this. It's not like people are mass emailing everybody. There's like this hotline to like, I don't think she's a VP. She's like one level below that maybe. And people were just constantly pinging this hotline about, hey, like if we're still coming into work and risking our health just because we can't work at home like all these other people, can't we get compensated some way? Like cut the VP bonuses this year or something like that. And finally somebody responded with kind of my thoughts of like, hey, we still have jobs. Let's think about it from that perspective. Like we're still earning money. We don't have to largely worry about making our payments anymore. Think about the people that are going to be out of business because of this. Think about it from that perspective and don't go asking for more money. Yes, like we're risking ourselves, but so are the Amazon delivery people and the grocery stores and the restaurant people and everybody else is that's still open for business.
That doesn't mean you can't ask for more, though. And if you think you should ask for more, you should ask for more, because that means that your service is more valuable, or you are putting yourself at risk, then you've earned that much more as well. But yeah, just because you deserve more or have earned more doesn't mean that you forget about those other people. You're still right there. You can do both.
Yeah. Well, I did personally like the idea of like, yeah, let's – if we're still coming into work to meet these schedules to – earn those VPs their bonuses, maybe they could give up some of that bonus money and give it to us, like, because we helped them earn it by keeping them on schedule. But the answer was pretty much flat out, no, that's not going to happen, which not surprising.
Right. You know, that's how that business works. And then you say, okay, well, I know how I'm valued here, and it's not as much as the VP, and maybe that's something to consider for the future.
Well, I overheard another manager telling one of her employees that they should actually put him in for his promotion now to kind of hype up the fact that, hey, you're still coming into work and helping them do all this stuff. Like that should be appreciated by that. And like, so I had to ping my manager and be like, yeah, you're supposed to put me in like 6 months ago. And then like this reorg happened and this thing happened and then end of year happened. Like now is the time to kind of do that for me. Maybe I would get some more appreciation out of it.
Yeah. On the personal finance side of things, because I'm still employed, still getting my full paycheck, this has actually been a pretty good time for me financially. Yes, my stock market investments have taken a hit, but again, I'm not looking at that as an issue. I got my tax refund and then I got a tax stimulus thing. So all things considered, I feel flush. And yet I have concerns because I also see that this has the potential to continue on for a great deal longer. I have fewer expenses. I'm not commuting, but I have some different expenses. My kids are home more and doing things differently. They actually are probably consuming less in terms of my resources and financial resources right now, but that could change. They're not getting things from the school that they might have gotten otherwise. I'm going to have to reproduce somehow. But ultimately, my biggest concern is that if we can't get the economy going again pretty quickly, because I work for a nonprofit that essentially thrives on donations, if the donations go away, or the nonprofit's own investments, which have also taken a hit, don't recover in a timely enough fashion, then they're going to have to look at downsizing as well. So I haven't been terminated yet, but there could very easily be a knock-on effect where I could see that kind of negative impact on myself or on others that I care about. And so it's going to be important more so than ever, even though we're in the middle of a crisis, to continue to build those nest eggs, to have that savings, to have a stash of dry good foods, that beans and rice that Paul was actually talking about. And I'm talking about literal beans and rice sometimes. Get a couple of pounds or more, a couple of 20 or 30 pounds of bags of beans and some big old bags of rice and put them in dry, safe places in, you know, pest-proof containers so that you have food available, not just for yourself, but this is the thing that gets back to what Travis was talking about, so that you can share with your community, because there are people out there who are in much worse places than we are, and they may need that help. And if we know that they need that help, then we can share from our own abundance. And that's where being local really matters. The government can get you a check in the mail in 3 to 4 weeks if you're on direct deposit. You can help your neighbor out today if you know your neighbor needs help. So you need to be communicating with your neighbors and knowing where the need is so that you can help out in that way. And so knowing that those kinds of things exist, you can get the help if you need it, and you can be part of the helping process yourself. And there are all kinds of community organizations out there that are doing this kind of work, and you should know what they are in your area.
I feel like with all this talk about, you know, stock market returns and everything, I'm going to go ahead and pimp PaulFirstTheMarket.com because my investments have taken a hit like everybody else's, but I actually feel like I've got some pretty crow-worthy results. I'm actually looking at the Freedom Portfolio, which is basically my retirement portfolio that I manage of individual stocks. According to my records, I am up from the beginning of the year. So even with this huge pullback and everything, thankfully, it's on the back pretty much of Teladoc and Tesla, two stocks that have done very well this year, despite and in spite of this pullback. So PaulFirstTheMarket.com, check it out. I invest in individual stocks. You should look at it.
I was gonna just echo what Andrew had said there, where I'd mentioned this before even going on air, I think, Paul, but you know, my wife isn't driving, so we're essentially driving only one car now, and they're not going out to eat as often as they were. And so, like, a lot of our expenses have gone down. So in a way, I almost feel like if I had my way, I would probably, like, want to save this stimulus check we're getting, which is the exact opposite of what they want you to do with it, unfortunately.
For people, and this is one of the reasons why having an emergency fund, if you can swing it, is so powerful, because in many ways, if you're prepared and you can take advantage of this current situation, and assuming it's a short-lived situation to Andrew's point, and this is not like a long-running, multi-year downturn that kind of crushes everything, there's a lot of positives right now. Gas prices have, you know, courtesy of the war between not the literal or at least not the with firearms war, but the price war between Russia and Saudi Arabia, in terms of their output, gas prices have gone down, and because demand has gone down so much because nobody's driving to work or very few people are driving to work, gas is incredibly cheap. Interest rates have plummeted, and mortgage rates haven't really followed as much as I would have liked. But for a lot of people, you could there's a good chance you could refinance your home to a lower rate, or at least borrow money at a lower rate, whether through a home equity line of credit or something else. We didn't at all time it this way. In fact, because of the permitting process, usually it takes months to get to this place. But we actually just got solar panels installed one or two weeks ago right now. So I guess if apocalypse now happens, all we need to do is get our rice and beans, and we'll have some power and some food for at least a little bit of time. But I think there's an opportunity for taking advantage of this for the people who are prepared.
And we also keep talking about rice and beans, but another topical news story was about the Smithfield, right? Closed their plant. And like, so my wife and I are both like, okay, we kind of joked about rice and beans before, but now is probably the time to start getting rice and beans, because if the meat processing plants start closing down, then you're out of meat too.
Like I said earlier, if you're, do not panic.
Right.
Do not panic.
No.
But if you are going to panic, panic before everyone else panics.
Right. Yes, I heard that podcast episode.
Yeah, no, it's thank God we have a Costco membership, because we were able to go there and get like all the beer that we need. That's a good point. Is there anything else that people want to touch on in terms of any financial topics?
Oh yeah, not financially. I had a few other.
All right, anything else at all?
More lighter topics. A little bit lighter topics, but this has finally got me to learn how to check out library books to my Kindle.
Nice.
Which I think one of our previous podcasts, Gurky, was on. She kind of not beat me over the head, but she's like, it's pretty easy to do. You should do it. So I was like,
you're an idiot, probably.
I guess I'll try. And yeah, it's simpler than I actually thought it was. So I've been doing that. My book clubs obviously have been canceled, but they've been moving to Zoom. No, not Zoom. They use WebEx, whatever that is, I guess.
Mine's been on email.
Yeah, so they've been emailing all these personality quizzes and all these other things. I'm like, ugh, guys, what? Stop replying all. so that's been changes to my reading habits, was finally picking up my Kindle, because actually, not ironically, but this was the year I was planning on like not checking out library books and actually reading the books I have at home anyway. So kind of worked out in that way of I'm forced now to read the books I already have. And our comic book shop guy said, I expect everyone to be caught up on all their comics by the time we reopen, because you guys have no excuse now to not be reading everything you've bought.
So just as a similar point on that, you know, we have the time to read our backlogs or, you know, other things in the backlogs. I heard that the amount of time people are putting into video games is up by over a third, and yet video game revenues are only up by like 17%. And so some analysts over at Bloomberg were like, this doesn't make any sense. Why aren't they buying the in-app purchases? And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that people like me, who have bought a lot of video games in the past and not had the time to play them, are playing the games that we've already bought. And very fewer people are going out and buying new games. Although I'm sure that there are a lot of people who are still buying new games.
So quick, I guess that's just tracking more like console and PC gaming, because I'm sure like, I mean, we had let our kids start using their Kindle Fires far more than they had before. And since we have free time unlimited, it's not like there's actually everything is unlocked, which is kind of weird. You can go into the in-app stores and everything is just free because of the membership to it. But
yeah, I don't know how that is being calculated. It was from Bloomberg, but their sources was not something I checked out. So I don't know what those stats are based on.
I wonder if some of that has to do with the fact that a lot of the game companies are transitioning to a subscription model. You have Xbox with their Ultimate Game Pass. Apple has some sort of game subscription service as well.
Apple Arcade.
And I think Google has it. EA Pass, or I'm sure I'm getting some of these names wrong, but there's not insignificant number of, you know, subscriptions you could have where it's like, I don't need to buy games or even necessarily spend any in-app purchases. I can just kind of load up whatever's available now and then run with it.
Yeah, if I fired up my Xbox, I haven't touched those games for what, probably 5 years now. So I would have tons of games still to go back and actually play that I never finished.
Maybe you have something to do rather than read all those comic books.
Disappoint your comic book store owner.
I was at Target a couple of times actually this past week, and one of the things I saw there was they had a not a full size arcade unit, but kind of like one that you can put on your desk, so it's kind of missing the bottom half. Otherwise, it's close to full size. Yeah. And they had Pac-Man there for $200. It's like, ooh, I shouldn't spend $200, but it's Pac-Man in your arcade. But I'm like, you know how many versions of Pac-Man I have sitting on my Xbox hard drive right now that I don't play either? Like, I should probably just go home and play those.
Yeah. So I have one more thing that I was going to end, one question I was going to end on, but I want to make sure there's nothing else you guys want to talk about first. Anything? Going once? Going twice?
Sold.
Right. My question is, and with the acknowledgement that none of us are at all experts or qualified to answer this question.
Thanks.
But, you know, especially Andrew. Andrew knows nothing. When do you think this is going to end? How long do you think this is going to last? Because, I mean, maybe coincidentally or not, today has been like a lot of like, oh, we might not see live sports again until 2021. Or we, a lot of, I don't want to say scare articles because I don't think that was the intention. But certainly scared me a little bit. You know, a lot of talk about how things are never going to return to the same, or they're going to be like years until people, you know, we can have any kind of live, you know, sports with a crowd, or you know, restaurants reopening for not for many, many months more. Any just gut feelings, or if you want to pretend it's an educated opinion, Andrew, you can pretend.
Well, I guess the only, and maybe it's not even a necessary stipulation, but we can say how much longer it will end. Do you mean the actual pandemic or the measures we're taking? Because some of these measures are going to last longer than the virus is around, just to make sure that it is gone, right?
When do you think you'll first either go to a restaurant or see a movie in a movie theater or go to a basketball game or insert whatever event you're most likely to, will be the first event you'll do to like celebrate, like, yes, we're no longer, you know, stuck in this social distancing mode. Like, we're able to do stuff again.
Well, I guess restaurant would be the most likely that I would go to first just because of timing. But I mean, I don't expect to go to a baseball game until next year. Just because it's by the time they could start playing, I don't know if it would be worth it for them to start up a season. Is partially some of how it's going to go, right?
And, like, and you're an Orioles fan, so you know they might already be out of it by the time they start up the season.
Hey, the Knicks. The last time the Knicks were good was the lockout season in '99. So lockout can some, or shortened season can sometimes help a team, but
so I think
not a bad team.
I think the question boils down to two things. One, when did the governmental impacts of this rescind? So in Virginia, we said that the executive order is in effect through June 10th. So June 11th is basically the earliest that you could possibly say that things are going to go back to normal in Virginia. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I think it's likely to be tried. And then, say, June 11th, maybe restaurants are open and we do some stuff. But things are going to be very different inside the restaurant. It's going to be hard to find a restaurant that is full, maybe even hard to find a restaurant that's open. And then the experience inside the restaurant is going to be very, very different as well. So in terms of those effects, we may be seeing lingering effects from that for the rest of our lives, and how our culture and positions on certain things, especially with regards to hygiene, will be changed probably for as long as we can remember into the future. I think it's also likely that we will see additional lockdowns in the future. If we open up too early and things start to get bad again, we'll lock back down again. Is that likely? I don't know. But I do know that viruses do have periods of activity and periods of inactivity. It could become back, if not in the summertime, then perhaps in the fall. And if we have another recurrence in the fall, we'll see another lockdown in the fall, I think. So when will we see the end of these kinds of measures? I don't know, but I would not expect to see a normal, truly normal life again for another at least 8 months.
That seems fair.
One thing, just when you were saying about the public health and how it'll affect restaurants and everything, like the, you know, all the stores now have little dots and lines of saying like stand here, stay, you know, 6 feet apart here and all that stuff. Like, I kind of see those maybe not staying around forever, but like kind of to your caution tape example on the Washington, on the monuments and everything, like these companies had to pay money to build these signs and put them up and everything. So it's not like they're going to take them. I wouldn't think they would take them down right away. So those are going to be lingering reminders for longer than we might want.
And it may be that they're more efficient in certain ways. You know, I went to the grocery store late last week, brought some groceries to my parents too. And the grocery stores were laid out in a way that was different since the last time I'd been to the grocery store. So it'd been a little while. They had directional arrows so you were supposed to go one direction in one aisle and another direction in the other aisle, so you weren't crossing paths as often. And, you know, one of my frustrations with going to the grocery store was that it's chaotic, right? Mm-hmm. It's now much more structured, which is great if you know exactly what you want or you're trying to go through every aisle. But if you don't know where something is and you're wandering around lost looking for stuff, it can cause some problems. And that was definitely in effect. And people were not following the rules at all, despite the fact that the loudspeakers were playing the message repeatedly, go down this. People were going the wrong way on the aisles all the time. So I think we may see it get more regimented first before it falls back, where they're like, okay, we have these rules. We are actually going to enforce them. If you cannot go the right way in our aisles, we may ask you to leave our store. They had limited access to the store. The grocery store was a big grocery store. They said they wouldn't let more than 137 customers in at a time. Because I was shopping early, I didn't have any problems on my first go-through for my groceries. But when I went back to get my parents' groceries, I had to wait a few minutes. We may see stuff like that continuing for a while, too, where we just say, okay, we're going to have lower densities of people permanently.
So how does I think I've seen pictures of it, but like if you're standing outside the grocery store, you're still standing 6 feet apart. So that's a pretty long line if you have enough people, right?
Like, when the line started building up, people were not standing 6 feet apart. I tried to, but the people behind me were not standing 6 feet behind me.
Yeah, because I had heard that's like, in especially early on before they started doing that outside the store, like, yeah, you limit the people in the store and then you just create a huge crowd outside, which is just as bad as letting them all in the store at once.
I think it may be differently bad.
Yeah.
Well, it reminds me of, for a while, and I think they've gotten a little bit better at this, but I remember in the first week or two of this kind of social distancing, I kept on seeing these news articles where it's like, you know, the government is urging everybody to remain socially distant, stay at home, only go out when you need to be. And you'd see Trump or Pence or whoever it was at the podium, and like people packed behind them, just shoulder to shoulder, serving no purpose whatsoever other than to be an example of what not to do. And I'm like, how are we supposed to take you seriously that we're supposed to be remaining like socially distant and all this stuff when you have like people packed like sardines on a stage just for like the photo op opportunity?
Well, are the press people still packed together? I haven't watched any press conferences. I assume the press people have to be spread out at this point too.
Yeah, I've seen some pictures. It looks like they have them scattered in such a way that they still seem closer than 6 feet to me, honestly, but maybe it's just an optical illusion. I don't know. I think one other thing I wanted to point out is I think one variable that has to be considered is people's tolerance for these kind of measures. We've already seen, I think, in Michigan that there has been some pushback against these kind of social distancing measures and lockdown measures and only go out if it's essential. And I don't think it's necessarily just because people are stir crazy staying at home. It's that people's livelihoods have been ruined and continue to be ruined. And there are a lot of people out there who are, even with the stimulus and the CARES Act and everything, they're falling in really hard times. And it can probably seem difficult for them to comprehend why their lives have to be ruined for what they might perceive as just being a bad flu, depending on where they get their news and everything. And I think you're going to see that escalate pretty quickly. As people's very limited emergency funds run out and as these stimulus payments run out, these stimulus payments are not enough to last a lot of people very long. I think I saw that, you know, maybe a rent payment, not even a whole mortgage payment for a lot of people. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to reopen sooner rather than later. Maybe sooner than we should. And yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I think that's going to happen. I do think that's also expected that, you know, these measures are extreme and therefore cannot be sustained. You can't sustain extreme measures for very long periods of time. So you do it to curb the worst of the experience, and then you open up again to let some of the pressure off. And then when the damage from the disease starts to pick up again, you lock it back down again. And you go through this period of locking down, opening up, locking down, opening up, where it delays the experience very painfully on both sides. The disease goes on longer, the experience of lockdown goes on longer, but you have these moments of tolerance to allow yourself to get through it so that you have some kind of economy happening and people can survive.
It'll be interesting to see if that cycle is still going, how that affects schooling.
Yeah.
Because if you're constantly disrupting the schools in order to do that, like, that's going to be really chaotic.
Yeah. We're going to see a lot of changes to distance learning. We're going to see a lot of changes to telework whenever possible. But there are going to be knock-on effects from this that we're going to see for years and years, for sure, simply because we've already had such a tremendous impact to the economy that it's impossible for us not to. You know, Paul started off this conversation and the previous one, you know, is this going to be a generational thing? It absolutely is. It remains to be seen just how deep it's going to go, but it is definitely already big enough that it's going to have generational style impacts.
I will say there's a lot of talk, especially among the investing world, about like, oh, are people going to take cruises, you know, once lockdown ends? Are people going to go back to theme parks like Disney World and Disneyland? Are people going to, you know, fly at the same rate as they did before? Is teleworking going to be more important? All these other things. If I had to pick one industry that I think is going to be permanently changed and irrevocably disrupted, I suspect it's going to be the education industry. Or industry is the wrong word. In the education sector, just seeing how, and maybe this is just purely anecdotal and my own personal experience, but it doesn't seem like the schools have been super prepared in general, at least the public schools have been super prepared to handle this. And I just contrast it with my kids take Taekwondo. It's a private company, and pretty much immediately the instructor was like getting on Zoom meetings and offering like recorded classes that people could watch on YouTube, and was kind of on top of things. And my kids are actually taking more Taekwondo classes now than they were before, just because it's actually in some ways more convenient, you know, just log in on at home.
And you're not spending hours in the school building. You know, the hours in the school building was in a lot of ways the greatest value that the school has provided to the parents. Because mm-hmm. it's the childcare for the kids while the parents are working, especially for situations where it's dual income situations. That is no longer on the table, and the stability of it is no longer on the table. So how that's going to impact the educational industry, I think calling it an industry is fine because it is an industry. I can definitely see that being a massive, massive change. My pick is movies. I don't think we'll see a return to the movies in the way we've had movies in the past for the foreseeable future. Movie theaters may not completely go out of business, but they're going to have to continue to adapt their business model to more live shows, performances, demonstrations of big live events. You know, you could have a Super Bowl party at the movie theater as opposed to showing movies first run, I think, and still have some success with that.
I think it's going to drive the movie theater business even further into the blockbuster, like MCU movies, Fast and Furious movies, like those type of movies are going to be the only things that are worthwhile going to the movie theater for, as opposed to going to see a random comedy or a drama that is just as good watching on your TV on your couch.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point, and it probably would be my number two pick. Yeah, there I've seen some, Trolls World Tour was a movie that was supposed to come out at some point. Mm-hmm. And to my mind, it looked like an absolutely horrible movie. But maybe I don't have good taste in movies. I don't know. I'm sure people will let me know. But apparently they decided to release it to straight to digital. Not to like streaming services like a Disney Plus or something like that. But it's just you can rent it for, I don't even know what the price is.
I think it was $20.
It's $20 for 48 hours.
Yeah. I was going to say $19.99, some absorbently high price.
That's what they did. And then they did that with Invisible Man and a bunch of other movies, yeah.
Yeah, well, Invisible Man and Onward had actually released.
It had been out,
yeah,
yes.
Trolls was just a pure release. And apparently it made like $90 million on that first weekend or something like that, which is maybe even more than they were expecting to make in theaters. And granted, there's a lot of things behind that. Like, you know, maybe people were cooped up and they were desperate for some sort of entertainment for their kids. It's probably like the first new movie release in like who knows how long. They had all that time to themselves. But I think it has shown that you don't necessarily need to have a wide release in the theaters to make a lot of money. And there's enough streaming services out there now. There's enough Disney Pluses, Hulus, and Netflixes. And Netflix is doing their own thing. Like they have been releasing some movies in theaters, but largely they just kind of throw it out there on the streaming service. I think we've definitely proven the that movie theaters aren't necessary, and we can probably do without them. So I think that's a pretty strong pick too. Travis, do you have your own pick for this thing that we just came up with?
But I think I kind of indirectly already said probably schools, because I said it's going to be massively chaotic if you have to keep opening and closing them. Plus, for higher education, there were already people trying to replace going to an actual brick and mortar university with online classes, things like that. So, and doing, you know, you can look up any sort of trade stuff almost on YouTube to learn how to fix anything in your house or anything on your car at this point too. That doesn't replace actually going to a school to get those trade skills, but you know, no, there was,
we found a lot of, I mean, out of necessity, we found a lot of kind of homeschool and other like ways of educating our kids at home. You know, there's Khan Academy, there's just a ton of resources out there. And I think that there will be a not insignificant number of people who have already had to make like the hard decision that, like, we, you know, we don't have that daycare that we had before where the kids were out of our hair and we've had to make permanent changes. And you know what? It works, and maybe we're just going to stick to that. All right. Anything else, or should I wrap us up? All right. I'm seeing. Travis.
Oh no! I was just about to say my laptop actually has like 10 minutes of battery life left. So either I need to go charge, right, or we need to wrap up.
We're going for 12 more minutes right now. All right. So check us out at rampantdiscourse.com. We got a Facebook page, facebook.com/rampantdiscourse. You can check us out on Twitter at rampantdisc. We have a Discord channel discord.io/rampantdiscourse. Leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to us. Just let us know what you think of this. Hope you guys are staying safe and washing your hands and wearing your masks and everything else. Can't stop the discourse.